We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Every day, it seems, most of us are surrounded by noise. There are some people who would argue, well, that's just the cost of modern life. But it's also true, if you look back in history, that humans have been complaining about noise for a long time. It does seem to be the case, though, that there is some link between noise and human advancement. We'll talk about that this morning in this part of the show, and also we will discover that, to some extent, noise is just a matter of definition. Our guest for the program is Garrett Kaiser. He's a freelance writer. He's a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. He's the author of a number of books, including a new one that deals with this topic, noise. The title of his book is The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, and it's published by Public Affairs Books. It's out now in the bookstore if you'd like to look at it. It's all about noise in history, in popular culture, and in our daily lives. And, of course, as we talk, questions, comments from people who are listening certainly are welcome. If you are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We have a toll-free line, so if it would be long-distance call, use that, 800-222-9455. You can also send us your emails, will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, you have questions, comments, you're welcome to call. And Mr. Kaiser, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
So you live in northeastern Vermont. Is that a fairly quiet place where you live?
For the most part, yes.
That's fortunate. I'm sure that some people, depending on where they live, would say that that's fortunate. I guess one of the things I found myself thinking, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, is whether, in fact, we have come to a time and a place where, for most people, quiet is a luxury good.
Well, yes, I would say that for many people, quiet is a luxury good, and it is certainly not the only luxury good. We are perhaps looking at a future where drinkable water will be a luxury good, but quiet gets distributed much as the other luxury goods do, which is with vast inequities.
Yeah. Well, and you, I think you make some very interesting and very subtle points here, and I would want to make the point right at the beginning that that this book is not a it's not an anti-noise screed. It's not that at all. And it does encourage people to think about when you use that word, what do you mean? And also to encourage them to think about some larger issues. And maybe one of the big ones is this relationship between power and noise. And I suppose it's always been the privilege of the wealthy and the powerful in society either to make a big noise or to command silence.
That's right. And one of the things about noise and silence that I think deserves comment is that people often think of noise as the opposite of and the enemy of silence, which in some cases it certainly is. You have a noisy library or you have a quiet library. But the other quality of noise, at least of loud noise, is its ability, like the ability of the powerful who often make it, to drown out lesser sounds, to dominate the landscape the way that the powerful can dominate an economy or dominate a world. An example that you can use to make this clearer is imagine a pond or a small lake, and you're there, and all the sounds that you hear, you might call it quiet. It's by no means silent. There are the sounds of birds. There are the sounds of kids playing in the water. Maybe somebody has some music playing low. There's a hot dog stand nearby, and people are laughing and telling jokes nearby. And then a jet ski comes in a few feet from shore, and makes a circle around, and at that end, mothers get the kids out of the water, and at that point, that device owns the lake, and the sound from that device is all you hear.
Hmm. Does this here, Doug, maybe get us to talking about and thinking about the matter of subjectivity here, in what, to some extent, does it is it up to the individual to determine what is and is not noise?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you were to ask me what's the difference between, you know, noise and just sound in general, I would say, well, first of all, noise is a subcategory of sound. But second of all, almost built into anybody's definition of noise, there's an element of subjectivity. And that's one of the things that interests me about the subject and that drew me to the subject, is that there was a subjective component along with some measurable, verifiable, objective, scientific aspects to it as well. In other words, it shares the same complexity that we as creatures do. So you're absolutely right. What one person would designate as a noise, probably another person is not going to designate as a noise. Even the same sound is going to cause different levels of annoyance, or perhaps no annoyance in some cases, based on who's making it, how you feel about the person making it, whether you're making it. My vacuum cleaner's okay, but my neighbor's vacuum cleaner is too loud. But all of the subjectivity needs two footnotes when you're talking about noise. And the first is that even subjective annoyance can have objective consequences. If stress gives you cancer, you can say that the stress is attributable to subjective factors, but the cancer is not subjective. It's objective. It's a thing that you can measure and see and die from. And the second footnote is that subjectivity has its limits, because noise is a measurable phenomenon, and noise past a certain level can also make you deaf.
Yeah, certainly that's an important qualification, that we know that high levels of noise are hazardous to people's hearing, that being constantly exposed to noise pollution is hazardous for your health, and certainly we've heard all of these stories about the use of noise, loud noise, particularly I guess loud obnoxious music, actually being used as a torture method.
Yes.
Whether you actually want to use the word torture or not, it's clearly been used that way. And interestingly enough, going back a long way in human history, people have recognized that that was something that could be applied in that way.
Yes, that's right. The use of loud bells and that as an instrument of torture. In one ancient Chinese document, it's even suggested. I don't know whether this was actually put into place or it was just a suggestion, that you know, capital crimes be punished by subjecting the criminals to the loud ringing of bells until they were driven mad and then died.
Was there something in particular that got you drawn into writing about this subject?
Well, I don't think that I'm an overly noise-sensitive person, but I am a somewhat private person, a person who enjoys things like conversation and study and nature, all things which can be affected by noise. And I think that I've also been interested for some time in the way that certain individuals or corporations of individuals can feel the right to usurp what used to belong to everybody, like the soundscape of a village or a city or a public square, and someone's ability, presumption, to say, well, this did belong to all of you, but now it belongs to me. And that interests me not only in the acoustical environment, but in the economic and in the political spheres as well. So I think that drew me to the subject. Mm. And the fact also that it's such a rich subject that it takes any number of disciplines to really work one's head around it. the background of historians and scientists and psychologists and doctors and musicologists, all this can be brought to bear on the subject. I'm fond of saying that if you have 10 noise experts in a room, you have a little renaissance. Hmm.
Our guest in this hour of Focus, Garrett Kaiser, is a freelance writer. He's authored a number of books. His essays and poems have also appeared in L.A. Times, Mother Jones, New Yorker, Best American Essays, and he is the author of a newly published book, recently published book, that's titled The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want. The subtitle is A Book About Noise. It's published by Public Affairs. Questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455. We have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And we also have the email, so you can send your comments along to will-talk@illinois.edu. We have a caller here we'll talk with on our toll-free line up in Batavia, the northern part of the state. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I find it funny that a lot of people can't do without noise. I like to do a lot of backpacking and hiking, and I love it when out in the quiet, and, you know, you don't hear anything but, you know, the animals making their noise. And I brought this out in a Boy Scout camp one time, and you know, you can hear animals, certain kinds that you won't hear, you might have. You know, you might have it in your own backyard, but you can't hear them because there's too much noise. And I find that more people are growing up, well, at least this generation's growing up, they've got to have noise, like running. Why do people have headsets on all the time? Because they got to have noise. And then you find out when you're in your, you know, your 50s and 60s, why your hearing is going. And I was wondering about your comment. I'll get off and listen. Thank you.
Well, you can comment on any part of that that you like.
Well, first of all, I agree with your caller, and I've observed along with your caller that many people seem to be unable to do with any kind of sound, without some kind of sound playing in the background. And that sound, of course, that's constantly in the background is often preventing you from hearing other sounds. And I really do believe that one of the most worthwhile things we can teach our children is the difference between pleasure and addiction, and the difference between listening to something because you want to listen to it, because you're taking the time to appreciate it, because it makes you feel fuller as a human being, and listening to something simply because you'll go nuts if you don't have it on. Mm. In other words, it's gone almost beyond your volition, beyond your ability to choose. It's just got to be there, or you have a problem.
Yeah.
It's the difference between, you know, being a gourmet and being addicted to food.
You know, it makes me think of an experience that we had here. Now, you know, maybe it's been a couple of months, maybe. There was one day here on the campus where there was a campus-wide computer problem, and it didn't turn out to be the case, but the thought was maybe there was a major virus attack going on. So one of the things that they told us here in our building was everybody should turn off their computers. And they're everywhere here, and in the room where I work, everyone has one on their desk, and I think there are even more computers than there are people, and they're all on all the time. So we went around and we turned them all off. And what I realized, I had never really understood just how much noise all those little fans on the computers were making all together, because when we turned them all off, the quiet in the room was eerie. And that was, and until that point, I had never realized it. I just habituated to it, I guess. They were always on, and so I really didn't think very much about it. And I wonder, so when you ask this question about why is it that people can't stand silence, is that they have become used to so much background noise that when, if it's gone, something just doesn't seem to be right.
Yes, and I think that is true, and I've noticed it even in my relatively quiet surroundings that you noted before. If we have a power outage, even though my house, most people would feel is quiet and the surroundings are quiet, but the refrigerator goes off, the furnace fan goes off, any radio or music device we might have on goes off, the lamp goes off, and it is eerie, but it's also wonderful that suddenly you hear the breeze coming in the window. And you're also hearing a sound that your ancestors heard for thousands and even millions of years. And if you're conscious of that, that can be pretty heady. You're right. We've gotten used to having something on all the time. And I would say related to that, we've gotten used to using petroleum all the time, using electricity all the time, that there really is a tie-in between our addiction to sound and our addiction to other things that make sound, make noise, and and as a byproduct of that, also produce carbon emissions and other forms of pollution.
Well, that, I think, points me to the title of the book. And to a question about whether the noise level that we live with and sometimes are unhappy about, is that something that is directly connected with all of the things that surround us that we have come to depend on or we think we depend on? It's a particular kind of living. The noise comes with it. So it would be very difficult to get rid of the one because it would mean giving up the other.
Well, yes, and I think that the noise is connected with a lot of things that we want. It's certainly connected, as I point out in my book, with a lot of things that I want. But that paradox there, that unwanted sound can come from things we want, which at first strikes us as somewhat, you know, absurd and even tragic, is actually hopeful because it points to the fact that we apparently have evolved in such a way or we're wired in such a way that we have negative responses to things that are hurtful to us. So I could be, you know, eating away or drinking away like there's no tomorrow, and I don't want to stop. I'm enjoying it, and I would go until I passed out or died. But then I start to get a little nauseous, or I get sick to my stomach, or something happens physiologically that tells me that as much as I might want all of this that I'm stuffing into myself, it might not be that good for me. And I think that noise functions in something like the same way. We can't hear carbon emissions, but we can certainly hear the sound of a jet taking off and spewing all kinds of those things. And I think that in our negative response to noise, we're being told something. My dad was a do-it-yourself guy, worked on his cars, and I can remember his always telling me, a noise in a car is like a pain in a body. If you ignore it, you're gonna go from a small trouble to a big trouble. If you have a pain in your body, go to a doctor, and if you have a noise in your car, check out and see what it is. Well, I think you can extend that and say if you have a big noise in your civilization, you might check that out too.
Again, our guest in this hour of focus is Garrett Kaiser. His book is The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want. The subtitle is A Book About Noise, published by Public Affairs. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm sure that a lot of people would want to blame modern industrial life, and I would feel fairly certain that the noise level in the world did indeed go up around the time of the Industrial Revolution. But I think one of the interesting facets here of the story and one of the things that you write about is that going back a long way, really certainly a long way before the Industrial Revolution, people were talking about noise. They were aware of the hazards of noise. It may be that the sources were natural, although I'm sure that human beings found ways to make noise. But this preoccupation with noise, it's not something that has just come around in the last couple of centuries.
No, and as I note in the book, what has a claim to being the oldest book in the world, the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh, which was probably dates to 2,500 to 3,000 years before the Common Era. This epic story contains a flood story, very like the Noah and the Ark story in the book of Genesis, and many biblical scholars believe it's the source of that story. It has a boat. It has two of every animal. It has gods who are offended. It has one man who escapes the flood, et cetera, et cetera. But one difference between the two stories is that in the biblical flood story, human beings, or most human beings, are annihilated because of their wickedness. There's a suggestion because of their violence. In the Sumerian story, it's said that the gods destroy humankind with a flood because they have gotten so noisy. And the stories are not as different as one might think at first glance when you consider that one of the noises that arises in civilization is, in fact, the sound of violence. The Sumerians were the first people on record to field an organized army with wheeled vehicles. And that may have been part of the noise that their poets and storytellers said was offensive to the gods.
As far back as ancient Egypt, they were writing about tinnitus, about ringing in the ears, the thing that now we're certainly being cautioned about, particularly with exposure to loud noises and with so many people spending so much time with little earbuds in their ears and listening to music. But that makes me wonder, well, what in ancient Egypt would have been... What would have been the sources of noise that would have been enough to have that kind of effect on people?
My guess is that there probably were no noises, unless someone, I don't know, stood next to a trumpet, if they had such thing, that caused the tinnitus. I think it was probably caused either by disease or disease of the ear or something that, because tinnitus has a number of causes, loud noise being one. I think the point is that people who suffer from tinnitus, and apparently they've been suffering from it people have been suffering from it since the time of ancient Egypt, are first of all increasing, and second of all, we are perhaps in the midst of a civilization that is experiencing a collective tinnitus, so that even those of us who've been spared that daily affliction, and I have friends who have tinnitus, and it's no fun, but that even those of us who have been spared that have in fact created it and, you know, increased it. I think one of the ironies, that historical ironies around noise-induced hearing loss and tinnitus, is that some of our ancestors suffered from things without the knowledge of what had caused them. Mm-hmm. There are people in the past who lost their hearing in industrial environments where either hearing protection wasn't provided or they didn't realize the importance of wearing it. And now their great-grandchildren, who grow up in a time when we know that, are losing their hearing at the rate of, well, right now, 1 in 8 American children has noise-induced hearing loss. That's 5 million kids, and most of that is needless.
Yeah, I would just the final thought about the Egyptians and probably people across time. My guess would be that in occupational exposure to sound, in industrial exposure, what you were talking about, somebody working in a factory, or maybe I don't know, somebody like a smith that was spending all day hammering. And making
right.
that loud ping, that people like that, probably going back as long as there were such occupations, there was a consequence for their hearing.
Very good point. And I had forgotten the smithing that would have been going on. And indeed, you know, that loud, impulsive sound is over a prolonged period of time can be damaging. I came upon a study when I was researching the book of a few physicians in Great Britain who claimed that they'd discovered that one of their patients had suffered noise-induced hearing loss by repeated exposure to the ping of a golf ball on titanium clubs, which apparently produces greater sound pressures than ordinary clubs. So certainly, yes, a blacksmith would have. And in fact, one of the one of the older expressions for, certainly not as old as the ancient Egyptians, but an old expression for noise-induced hearing loss was Boilermaker's disease, because the Boilermakers were doing just the thing you were talking about.
Yeah. We have another caller here in where we are, Champaign-Urbana. Let's talk with them in line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Comment on soccer games. The news said they plan to ban the loud horns used in South Africa, but they there say it's a cultural thing. And what about sirens for tornadoes? Some towns don't have them. And the web reports a nighttime humming noise in Arizona, like a diesel engine, and they could not find any source for it, and a lot of people reported it. Okay.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Certainly there has been quite a lot written recently about the Vuvuzela, this plastic horn that South African soccer fans blow in the stands. And for people who, I guess, were coming to the games who hadn't experienced that, there's been an awful lot written about just how incredibly annoying that it is. I have only read about it. I certainly can't claim to have heard what it sounds like.
No, I haven't either, but I imagine it probably is annoying. For me, it's of much lesser interest than other forms of noise, because first of all, it's being made in the context of an event that people freely come to, and may be part of the customs of a particular place, and anyone who finds it annoying can leave. What concerns me more are maybe the people in that same country or in our country. But I happen to know in South Africa from reading World Health Organization reports who live in shanty towns next to railroads or next to airport runways where there are planes, Chapter 2 airplanes that have been outlawed in other countries but still were sold to developing nations like South Africa. And these people hear that noise, and they're a long ways from having tickets to a soccer game, and they're also a long way toward from getting relief from that.
Yeah. Well, here, again, I think that gets us back to an important issue here that one might not think of right away, you write that in the book that, noise might really be a big issue. It is a small issue that offers keys to understanding some bigger ones. And one of those things has to do with who in society has power. And you say, well, maybe one might make the argument that sound isn't really a big issue. Maybe it's a small issue. But it's something that disproportionately affects the weak and the disadvantaged. And that maybe prompted my comment earlier when we started about whether you thought silence, quiet, was a luxury good. It seems that poor people are exposed to a wide range of pollution, and sound pollution is one, and that it falls much more heavily on disadvantaged people than it is the people who can hide themselves off to a quiet place.
Yes, and there have been some studies on that. There are some a number of stats based on, looking at people's ethnicity, their income, and their exposure to noise that indicate, and there's no surprise there, that the lower you are on the totem pole, the higher the decibel levels that you're probably living with. And as I say in the book, and as you note, I'd be the last person to say that of all the disadvantages suffered by disadvantaged people, that noise is the worst. I mean, if you don't have a job, if you don't have food, if you don't have clean water to drink, how much noise you hear is a relatively small concern. At the same time, as I also say in the book, our tendency to dismiss out of hand any issue that we regard as too small for our very important selves and our very important agendas to take into account is related to our tendency to do the same thing with people. with people we regard as small, with creatures we just regard as small, with communities, ecosystems, and cultures that we regard as small. It's the small stuff. It's precious. It's little. It's foolish. It's fussy. And so let's sweep it aside. And lo and behold, that very gesture is what leads step by step to the big issues like war and climate change and social dysfunction.
You know, I think about some of the things that in the past, particularly maybe in the 18th, 19th centuries, that people from other countries, say people from Europe, said about America when they arrived here. And these would have been people, many of them who would have had the experience of living in what were some of the big cities of Europe, but who came to the United States and talked about what American life was like and the pace of life and the fact that everybody seemed to be in motion and that there was this buzz of activity and that it was a very loud and boisterous kind of place, which gets at the peculiar relationship, and this is something that you write about, maybe the peculiar relationship between America and noise.
Yes, and that the increased din of America was noted by immigrants and by visitors, not always with disapproval. And, you know, I think whenever we obviously I have some strong feelings about reducing noise and about the harmful effects of noise. But I think whenever we try to put noise and silence into this good and evil polarity, we end up with trouble. There were a lot of people who came to America and also heard the sound of it as vitality, who for the first time in their lives were able to call out on the street without being censored or silenced if they were members of ethnic minorities. And the fact that they could go into the street and shout and laugh and sing was seen as part of the excitement and the freedom of being in America. And at the same time, also, there's this historic tendency to hear the sounds and the music of people regarded as foreign, as noisy. And that goes back even to Native Americans who remarked on just what a noisy bunch of people the English were. They couldn't get over how much commotion they made in their domestic arrangements and otherwise. And then, of course, the English, after they'd succeeded in wiping out a large number of Native Americans and planting themselves here, began to talk about how noisy Irish were, and the Irish in their turn about the noise of Italians, etc. So there's a tendency to hear the sound of other people as noise, and so we need to remember that one of the subjective factors that figure into noise, like it or not, is probably certain forms of prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this again, it makes me think about the it gets you thinking about some of the subjective aspects of this whole discussion of noise. That you take someone who was used to living in a very quiet place and drop them in the middle of a big city, and they're definitely going to notice, and they might find that very distressing. And people who live in cities sometimes find the noise level distressing. And at the same time, some other people would say it's part of the excitement of the place. And that's it's an indication of its vitality. It's an indication of its energy, that there is that pulsing, not only of activity, of sound. And that's some part of the special experience of the city. And some people like that, and I suppose some people don't.
That's right, and I'm one of the people who likes both. I mean, I live in the country. I enjoy the country. I like the quietness of country life. I find the sound of Midtown Manhattan exhilarating. I love to go to New York. I'm going to be there in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to it very, very much. So we are on solid ground to acknowledge that, you know, there's a different strokes for different folks aspect to this, and that we don't all have the same sensitivities or preferences. However, there are two, again, footnotes that need to be put on that, is that that acknowledgement and recognition is often made by people who have a choice about where they're going to be and where they're going to live and where they're going to recreate. I'm not a rich person, but I do have the luxury that when I feel like going to New York and hearing some sound, I can go to New York. And when I feel like being quiet, I'm able to earn and occupy my living in a quiet place. There are some people who don't have that luxury, and I think a humane society would take their needs into account. And the second thing is that whether we love the raucousness of the city or the quiet of the country or both, there are some things that we all need, sleep being one of them. And urban people and rural people can both experience sleeplessness. I've been awakened by coon dogs in the middle of the night, chasing their quarry, and sometimes people in the city are awakened by things, including their neighbors' air conditioners being turned on in order to drown out yet other sounds. There's kind of a noise arms race that can sometimes go on in urban environments where people are actually making noise to prevent hearing other noises. So there are those differences, there are those subjectivities, but when we put our heads on the pillow, we are the same, biologically the same creatures. And without that sleep, we suffer very similar losses.
Our guest, Gerard Kaiser, is a freelance writer, contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, author of a number of books, including the one that we're talking about here this morning. The title is The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. It's published by Public Affairs. And questions, comments, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And you may email your comments to will-talk@illinois.edu. Do you think that that part of the reason maybe that we live in a very noisy world and maybe the noise level is growing is that we place too little value on quiet activities and too much on loud ones?
Well, I think that's part of it, that we place too a little value, that we tend to view quiet activities as unimportant. You know, if I say that a certain device is interfering with my television reception or my telephone reception, well, that would be seen as a serious complaint, and I, as a member in good standing of the 21st century, and if I said that a certain device was interfering with my ability to hear birdsong, I might be dismissed as a nut. So yes, that's right. We place a great value on loudness, and part of that is historical. You know, loudness often communicates importance, power. Thunderstorms are loud, and they command respect. If you don't respect them, you might be struck by lightning. So that's tied into that as well. But I also think that noise levels have increased, not just because we don't have enough regard for quiet, but because we don't have enough regard for the sound that we ourselves can make. In other words, everyone's blasting their recorded, electronically reproduced music, filling the soundscape with that, but nobody's playing a musical instrument and nobody's dancing. Now, nobody should be put in quotation marks. Certainly some people are. But my feeling is that if noise levels are reduced, what would rise in their place is not necessarily solid silence, and I certainly hope not, but rather the sounds of people doing physical work, engaging in physical forms of recreation. So in other words, you have all these devices buzzing bzz, 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 here and there, but nobody's on their feet. Everybody's sitting down. So I think actually that it's not just a contempt for quiet, but at bottom, and I discuss this in my book, in some ways a contempt for our physical, visceral selves engaged in work, engaged in play, engaged in festivity, and not least of all, engaged with each other. there's that old saying, you know, if a tree falls in a forest and there's nobody to hear, does it make a sound?
Mm.
And in my book, I do a little variation on that, and I say if a maypole goes up in a village and everybody's there to dance around it, does it make a noise? When people are engaged in common celebrations and common festivals, things can get pretty loud, but for the most part, nobody's annoyed because they're all a part of it. If it's just a bunch of isolated, segregated units blasting their little machines, we have noise, but we don't have conviviality,
yeah.
And we don't have community.
Well, that's the old thing about if your next-door neighbors are having a party and you're not invited, that's noise.
That's right.
But if they ask you to come over.
The complaints down is invite the neighbors.
Is to invite the neighbors, exactly. So here's a caller to talk with someone over in McLean County. That's line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a somewhat of a question and a couple of comments.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is this is amusing to be hearing you because I had just said to my husband about a couple of weeks ago that someone should make a device, like a little pin that I could wear, that if I went from room to room, because I am a newsaholic, a radioholic anyway, that if I move away, I have to turn the radio on when I come back. If I'm blasting, if my hands are wet or something, I can't touch the radio, and it really hurts my ears. And same thing with television. You know, when the commercials come on, they're really loud. And I know I heard something why they do it and how they can legally get away with it. So if I could wear something that said, whatever's comfortable for my ear is a sound that the TV should make or the radio should make. If I get closer, it gets quieter. If I go further away, it gets louder so I can hear it in the other room. Anyway, that was just an interesting thing. And if someone is here, some entrepreneur or inventor is hearing it, that'd be a great thing to make for people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a question, if you know, has anyone done anything like that?
I'm not aware of that, no.
Okay, all right. The second thing I want to mention is about something on a spiritual angle. I mean, if you look at the couple of different churches that I attend, they both, one of the basic premise, a basic principle is to be quiet, to be silent and listen. And that's to listen to our own selves. Or God, if you want to use the word God. And I think we, as a culture, I mean, we talk about it, but we don't practice it very well on a spiritual angle. Anyway, and I think in general, too, I agree with you. If, you know, if you hear the noise, then you know something is wrong or not. And I think that happens spiritually, physically, mentally, in any other ways, too. The third thing, and this is just my little observation, is... and I think you just attended to that, so I'm just going to say I agree with you, is where I see all these kids walking around texting, listening to iPods or on telephone, and there's no more face-to-face communication. So I'm afraid at some point in time people forget how to read faces, how to listen to people's body language. Anyway, well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for the observations. You can comment on... any or all of that?
Well, some very important observations. Just quickly, she noted commercials loud. Also, movie trailers tend to be loud. And it's helpful to remember that we evolved to respond physiologically to loud noise because for much of our early history, loud noises were almost always tied to danger. So you heard loud sound and your body responded with an adrenaline rush that would enable you to run away from whatever was making that sound or turn and fight it. And we are manipulated with loud soundtracks that give us a rush, not because any danger's there, but because the advertiser wants us to respond even viscerally. And we're being manipulated when that happens. I was glad to hear your caller is familiar with communities where quiet is emphasized. One of the sad things for me as I was researching this book is to see how many religious groups, not only in this country, but in other nations and in a number of religions, were using public loudspeakers and PA systems to broadcast their message and often competing even with each other. Hitler said, without the loudspeaker, we not have conquered Germany. And I wonder what alternative message a religion is communicating if it's adopting the favorite device of Hitler to get its message across. And I share the caller's concern, finally, that that the public square, as people retreat into themselves, but that's also caused by noise, because people plug in their devices in order not to hear the loud ambient sound around them, and the cost of that is they're no longer engaging with the people around them.
Mm. We have maybe about 5 minutes left. Our guest is Gerd Kaiser. His book is The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. Someone wants to quickly try to get in a comment, they certainly can do that. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. One of the things that you say is that it was not your intention with this book to write something for people who were concerned about noise and were wanting to fight noise in their environment. But having said that, do you think that it is the case that more people are actually doing that? And that is, they're not simply putting up with noise, but they're also using whatever local laws exist, or maybe they're fighting to get local laws on the books that address noise.
Yes, and if I can just start by making a slight clarification, you're absolutely right that this is not a how-to book for fighting noise. But it does contain a number of appendices that I think would be useful, and indeed I designed them to be useful for people who are fighting noise, including noise organizations, a glossary of terms so that when people are experts are talking, you can participate, some arguments commonly used and how to refute them, et cetera. People are fighting noise. In researching the book, I set up a website, noisestories.com, to gather noise stories from around the country. I got them from around the world. And there are people fighting noise on a number of fronts and with a number of different results as far as success, yes.
One more caller at least, maybe two. Champagne, line one. Hello.
Yes, I just wanted to share a story. When I was working at the university, we had a conference and we had people come in from San Francisco and New York City and Boston, and we took them out to Allerton Park. And it was amazing the extent to which that revealed our adaptability, because they complained that it was so quiet they couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to share that. I thought that was funny.
I think that's the kind of story that you hear often when, you know, we've talked about people going from a quiet place to a noisy place. Say they live in the country and we take them to the city and they're struck by the noise. Certainly the other kinds of thing happens. People who are used to being in a very noisy environment, you get them someplace that's really quiet, and it can be very disconcerting.
And that's part of the loveliness, I think, of being human, that there is that variety and diversity. And, you know, I think one of the challenges of trying to build a beautiful society is one that allows for as wide a range of difference and diversity as possible, while at the same time meeting some common human needs for sleep, for conversation, for sustenance, for nurturing, for growing. And, of course, noise, one of the things noise also does is interfere with learning, as we've discovered.
Mm. Another caller here, Beecher City, Illinois. This is line two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
I live in a rural area, and I have a friend who recently moved to within two blocks of a heavily traveled interstate road. And the noise is constant, 24/7. And I asked him if that bothered him, and he said no, but I could not stand it.
Well, I don't know if you have a comment on that. Actually, it makes me think about I was visiting my parents over the weekend, and they live up in the Chicago area in one of the western suburbs, and they live very near the tollway, where there is traffic 24 hours a day. It's a constant kind of background a roar. I don't even know how even to describe it. It's even there at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And there are some places along the toll road that they've actually put up barriers to try to deal with that sound. But right where they are, It's very noticeable, and I notice it, and yet at the same time, I think also I find very quick how quickly how it just sort of fades into the background. It's constant.
Well, one of the factors there is that constant sound that is unvarying, even if it's fairly loud, tends to annoy and distract us less than impulsive sound, and that's been demonstrated. What your caller has observed doesn't surprise me. I remember talking to noise researchers who said they went to poll people about whether they were annoyed by the noise of some traffic, and these people had their televisions turned so loud they couldn't even hear what they were saying, but it didn't seem to bother the residents in the household. However, there's one question lurking underneath this, and that is, can the noise still cause some harm even if it doesn't annoy you? And there's an interesting study been done that shows that noise, highway noise, in fact, can elevate your blood pressure even if it doesn't wake you up. So you sleep through it, but it's still elevating your blood pressure.
We're going to have to stop. My apologies. We have a caller that we can't take. We just come to the end of the time for the hour. But I certainly would want to recommend to people that you look at the book, The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, a book about noise. There's much to think about here, published by Public Affairs, and it's written by our guest, Garrett Keizer. His last name spelled K-E-I-Z-E-R, if you go looking for the book. And, Mr. Keizer, thanks very much for talking with us.
Mr. Inge, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.